Vardhan means one who nourishes, one who inspires, and in doing so gives the greatest pleasure. The cows, the senses, the earth, all living beings. When that one Bhagavan appeared in earth as Ram, with bow and arrow, he protected Sita and all innocent beings by liberating Ravana. As Krishna, he appeared as a small boy who took care of cows in the land of Gokul. And in his compassion to the cows and the calves and the bulls, he demonstrated his compassion to all living beings. When he was just a little baby, just about 2-3 days old, a terrible terrorist named Putana came to murder him. If we read about the history of Putana and her prowess and her cruelty, she made the terrorists of today look like KG terrorists, kindergarten. She was cruel. She was slaughtering babies, drinking their blood, eating their flesh with nothing but pleasure. Little Gopal, he not only purified her, but he gave her liberation in the spiritual world. Because somehow or other she accepted his grace. Later, Kamsa, who was such a tyrant, he was so very powerful. Krishna gave him liberation. And when he was herding his little cows, actually when he was very young, he was herding the calves. And one day when they were out in the pastures, there were so many thousands of calves that he would take care of. One little calf was crying. And Gopal is in everyone's heart. He knows what we feel, what we think, where we've been, who we are. So Krishna could understand that this little calf was so lonely for her mother. And the Gopal Champu Jiva Goswami describes how Gopal, he was petting her, was pressing his face against her, and he was whispering in her ear, that we'll bring you to your mother very, very soon. She's waiting for you, and you'll be with her very soon. Please be happy. And that became the happiest calf in the history of creation. This is greatness. We read in so many scriptures, God is great. But here is that absolute truth that's creating, maintaining, and annihilating all of exists, all of the universes, sustaining the entire creation. The greatest saints and Brahmins are offering pujas and mudras and yantras and tantras and mantras. And yet, he has all the time in the world for one little calf who's lonely. To pet, to caress, to embrace, to whisper in her ear, I will take you to your mother, be happy. Krishna's unlimited and conceivable powers is he is Rasa Bihari. That means he can exchange love with all living beings unlimitedly if we are just willing to accept it. When he was taking care of cows, each cow is thinking, Krishna loves me. He loves everybody else, but he's just looking at me. And there were so many cows. And at the end of the day, when he was going to bring them back to Nandagaon village from the pastures, he would climb the tree called Terakadamba. How many of you have seen Terakadamba? Raise your hand. It's one of the holiest trees of Brajbhumi. It's in Nandagaon. Krishna would climb the Terakadamba tree and he would call all the thousands of cows to come to the tree to meet him. But Krishna has a Chinta Shakti. And on one level, a Chinta Shakti, which means inconceivable, unimaginable powers. We think about it, how he creates universes. He creates all species of life. But that's a small thing. That's a detail for Krishna. In fact, he doesn't even do it himself. He expands himself as Vishnu to do all that stuff. Krishna doesn't have time for creation and maintenance and annihilation. His time is in loving exchanges. That's all. So when he would climb the tree, he would call one name to call the cows. And each cow had their own name. They didn't have numbers like these days. They all had a personal, intimate name that Krishna gave them. And they all, not only did they have names, but they had like intimate, sweet pet names that Krishna would call them. Krishna. So Krishna would call out, Shamali, and all the cows would hear their name. And it's not that he called one name and by some mystic potency they were hearing different names. He was actually, in one word, he was calling the name of each cow was coming out of his mouth. And each cow only heard her name. One cow was thinking, she was hearing Surabhi, and another cow, Kalia, another cow, Gorangi, another cow, Shamali. And each cow was thinking of all these thousands of cows, Krishna's only calling my name. How fortunate, he's only thinking of me. And could you imagine? Krishna's love is unlimited. And when Krishna directs all his love toward you, what happens? You become totally inundated with the ecstasy of feeling his love, and that awakens unlimited love from your heart. It's reciprocation. So these cows would answer Krishna. And each one was thinking, I'm the only one answering. He would go, Surabhi. That's what she would hear. And from his heart, he was actually calling each and every one of these cows personally, intimately. That's his power. We can only do one at a time. But that's why he is Ishwara. And we are who we are. Surabhi! And she would go, That was her name of saying Sham. Sham! And then another would hear Sukla, and Sukla, oh, tears would be pouring from her eyes. Krishna's calling my name. Sham! Kamaduk! And all the cows would be so ecstatically enthusiastic, they would gallop toward Krishna, not just run, they would be galloping to Krishna, and their tails would go straight up in the air, pointing to the sky as they were running, and tears were pouring from their eyes, and because they were of their motherly love for Krishna, just profuse milk was pouring out of their milk bag and just falling on the ground, watering the grass. And the grass was so heavy. Because this wasn't just milk. This was an expression of their love for Krishna. It was their motherly love for Krishna. And the grass was vibrating in ecstasy. And they all would come, and they were all thinking, Krishna's just thinking of me. He's only calling for me. He loves me so much. And they all arrived, and they are looking at Krishna like tears of affection in their big, beautiful, round, glossy eyes. And Krishna's smiling from the top of the tree, and as he's smiling down at all these thousands of cows, and they're all around him in a circle, they all see that he's only looking at me. This is Rasa Bihari. He's the supreme connoisseur of loving exchanges. And when we love Krishna, there can be no envy. Because we can feel Krishna's love for us so intimately, there's no incompleteness. Envy is due to incompleteness. Something we lack, we want, and somebody else has it, and we can't bear that somebody else has it and not me. That's envy. It is described on the spiritual platform. The prominent symptom of real spirituality is that there is no trace of envy. There's inner satisfaction. And there's also no arrogance. Because you don't think, Krishna's only looking at me, and he's not looking at anybody else. That means I'm better than all of you. Because when we feel Krishna's love, it doesn't make us arrogant. It humbles us. Krishna's only looking at me. But everyone else thinks that Krishna's only looking at him or her. I'm completely satisfied. And I want to, this wonderful experience I have, I just want to share it with everyone. There's no arrogance. In other words, the true symptom that we're being touched by Krishna's love, God's love, and that our love is being awakened, is with all humility and compassion, we want to serve. Seva. We don't want to be the enjoyer. We want to be enjoyed. We don't want to be the controller. We're happy to be controlled by that love. And we want to share. I'd like to tell two little stories. There was a devotee named Narottam Das Thakur. I was at his birthplace a few years ago in Bangladesh. It's called Khetri. And I was asked to speak on his life. And my talk was, I think, 7 hours. Without stop. And I can't tell you how much I tortured the audience by doing that. But I was just so enthusiastic, I didn't realize it until afterward. But I'm not going to do that tonight. But I'll fast forward to one particular incident. He was a prince. His mother was the queen, and his father was a king of a whole area in East Bengal. In those days, the kings and queens of the local area were called zamindars. They were landowners of large tracts of land. He was the only son. He was the heir to all this land, all this wealth, all this influence, popularity, and power. And the parents, they loved him so much because he was so sweet-natured. He was so kind to everyone. He had such a soft heart, and he was so brilliant in his intellect. You saw today when the mother brought a little baby and asked me to feed grains. When, according to the Vedic culture and system, a baby doesn't eat grains until they're 6 months old. Until then, they eat softer kind of foods. So there's a ceremony of the first grains. And you saw how the baby just was smiling, and I put the little spoon in the mouth, and she went. Very simple. Sometimes they cry a little, but. Narottam, when they went to put the first grains in his mouth, the little baby, he didn't even have teeth. What age do teeth come in? Swamis don't know all this stuff. Does anybody know? Anyone? A mother? Okay, so he didn't even have teeth then. But his jaws were locked shut. And his lips were sealed shut. And he kept, wherever they put the little spoon of grains, he would turn the other way and turn the other way. And there was, in Bengal, this is a big festival. They have Brahmins doing yajnas, you know, homas, and they have Brahmins chanting mantras. And all the relatives are there, and they have kirtans all around. This is a big thing in those days, the grain giving. And the boy wouldn't open the mouth. He was determined. And the mother and the father and the aunties and the uncles were trying to pacify him. Nothing worked. So the king and queen were very flustered. What are we going to do? They've never seen anything like this before. So one great saint happened to be there. And he could see Narottam's heart. Just a little 6-month baby. He said, "This boy is such a saint, he will not eat anything that's not offered to Krishna. Offer the grains to Krishna." So they went to a temple and they offered the grains to Krishna with devotion. Then they came back and they offered it to him. And he opened his mouth and ate it and smiled and asked for more and more and more. So I'm starting to tell the whole story. But when he was just a small boy, he met one great devotee, a very saintly person. And he would sit with Narottama on the bank of the Padma River. It's one of the most holy, beautiful rivers in all the world. It's the river that's the border between Bangladesh and West Bengal. It's called the Padma River. So wide, so beautiful. And they would sit right on the bank of the Padma River. And he would tell them stories about Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Because Lord Chaitanya was Krishna, who appeared about 500 years ago. His appearance was prophesied 5,000 years ago in the great Vedas, and even before that in the Upanishads and the Srimad Bhagavat and the Mahabharata. Described how the Lord would appear with a beautiful golden complexion to propagate this Sankirtan, or the congregational chanting of the holy names. So the little boy would listen to these stories of the loving exchanges between Sri Chaitanya and his devotees. And he fell in love with Sri Chaitanya. And he fell in love with all the devotees he heard about. And he just wanted to be with them. He wanted to serve them. He heard about one person named Srinivas. Oh, I want to tell you that story, but don't have time. And he heard about Lokanath. And he would cry at night, I want to meet Lokanath. I want to serve Lokanath. And his parents didn't understand what's happening to our son. He was in love with Krishna. He was in love with Krishna's associates. And one day Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in a beautiful vision. He was just a boy. Now he's just like a little teenager. And Lord Chaitanya said, go to Vrindavan. So he, in the middle of the night, he just left. Didn't take anything with him. Just like about 14, 15 years old, and he was traveling, walking to Vrindavan all alone. When his parents woke up in the morning, they were searching everywhere for him. So they hired all sorts of guards and security people and investigators, find our son. And they were traveling everywhere. Because he was always chanting Krishna's names, they assumed he must be going to Vrindavan. So they actually, in the middle of a forest, about a week later, they found him. They said, you have to come home with us. And Narottam said, I will do whatever you want ultimately, but just listen to what's in my heart. I've fallen in love with Krishna. If you fall in love with someone, do you want somebody to come and take you away from that? I love him as my mother, as my father, as my friend, as my lover, as everything. If you were in my position, would you want someone to stand between you and me and your lover? The guards gave him money and said, go to Vrindavan. We'll pretend we never saw you. And it's a beautiful story. But he met Lokanath Goswami. And he accepted in his heart Lokanath Goswami as his guru. And he asked Lokanath Goswami, will you be my guru? Will you give me initiation? Lokanath Goswami said, I have never accepted any disciple in my life. Now I'm an old man, and my dearest friends, Sri Chaitanya has disappeared from the world, and Rupa Goswami has disappeared from the world, and Sanatana Goswami has disappeared in the world, and I'm feeling such loving separation for them. I can't and I won't initiate anyone. I'm sorry. Lokanath did not press it. He did not argue with them. He just wanted to serve him. So in those days in Vrindavan, they didn't have sanitary pipelines or anything. They didn't even need our eco-village sanitary system because they had no toilets. Lokanath Goswami, early in the morning, by about 4 o'clock, he would, or even earlier, he would respond to nature's calls. You know what that means? Somewhere in the banks of the river, a little distance in the forest, then he would take his bath, and then he would go to his temple to do his puja, to his Radha. Vinod was his worshipable deity. And every day when he came back there, that little area in the forest was so absolutely clean and fragrant and fresh. And he was thinking, this is just the jungle. Nobody comes here. And if anybody comes, they only come to respond to nature's calls. And this went on for weeks. And it was always like this. It was just so pure and clean and fresh. So he thought, somebody must be doing something here. So one day, he came early and was hiding in bushes. And he saw Narottam. Narottam, with his own hands, was cleaning the urine and the stool. And he was, you know, bearing it nicely. And he was sweeping the whole area. And he was sprinkling nice fragrances there. When Lokanath saw this, he was shocked. He never saw anything like this. He cried out, Narottam! Narottam! What are you doing? Why? Why? Why are you doing this? You are a prince. You were born in a family of royalty. I'm just an ordinary man. Why? You should be sitting in beautiful seats in palaces. Why are you cleaning my stool and my urine with your hands? And you're weeping tears while you're doing it. Why? Narottam stood before him with folded palms. He didn't want to be caught doing this. He was willing to just do this seva for his rest of his life without anybody ever knowing. Now, you know, 400 years ago, even you know. It's in scriptures. He was doing it secretly. Narottam looked down with tears flowing from his eyes, tears of gratitude. He said, my dear Guru, he said, the treasures of my mother and my father and my family are insignificant compared to the treasure that I have received. The greatest, ultimate treasure in all my life is to render this simple service for you. And I'm so grateful. And tears were falling on the ground. Lokanath Goswami began to shed tears himself with emotion, and he ran over and embraced Narottam and said, let me give you initiation. Selfless service. A few days ago, I was at overdone. And I went there to be a part of a beautiful ceremony, memorial, last rites ceremony for our beloved Shyamdas. I think I told you about Shyamdas, my relationship. He came to Vrindavan just after I left. And all the best friends I had became his best friends. And years later, when I went back to Vrindavan, they were all telling me about, you have to meet Shyamdas. And they were telling Shyamdas, you have to meet this Radhanath Swami. And we always wanted to meet each other, but we never met for about 25 years. And when we did meet, within minutes, he was my oldest best friend. And he said the same about me. We had so much in common. We had so much. We had memories of a time in Vrindavan that there's no one else alive now that I can discuss it with. I'd like to just say one thing about Shyamdas. That that expresses what was the substance of his heart. When we were at Govardhan, we had a beautiful ceremony at Surabhi Kund. Surabhi is the name of the mother of the cows of Vrindavan. And when Indra, who was a very powerful person, made a terrible mistake of an offense of trying to kill Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna's family, when he realized that Krishna was his beloved Lord, due to his arrogance, he lost his intelligence. He became angry. He went to Brahma. Brahma said, Indra, you are a fool. You cannot stand before Krishna after what you did. But if you go to someone who loves Krishna intimately, dearly, with a simple heart, if that person asks Krishna to forgive you, then he will forgive you. Go to Surabhi, the cow. Now here is Indra, most powerful warrior, his great king, wearing crowns and jewels. He's riding on an elephant. He has all sorts of weapons. And he bows his head at the hooves of a cow, simple cow. And she says, yes, come with me. And Surabhi Kund is the place where that cow asks Krishna, please forgive Indra. And Indra and Krishna bestowed all blessings upon Indra. And Surabhi, her tears fill that kund. The next day, I met a wonderful man named Milan Baba. Milan Baba is the grandson of Shyamdas's guru. Now, in India, traditionally, genuine spiritual knowledge descends in what is called parampara, or disciplic succession. Most of these disciplic successions begin at the beginning of creation, and they're passed down. And there's very, very great, powerful personalities who come into that disciplic succession who promote it to the world. Like the disciplic succession that my lineage is, descends from Brahma, and it was promoted by Sri Chaitanya, the great avatar. The parampara of Shamdas began from Rudra, or Shiva, and it descended and it was promoted in an incredible, glorious way by Sripad Ballabhacharya. Shamdas was very special. He had a deep, traditional, cultural faith and loyalty to his ancient tradition, but at the same time was so open to be accessible and kind to everyone, whoever they were. So I was speaking with this Milan Baba, with Shamdas' family, and he was telling us a story. Because Shamdas' guru, his grandfather, passed away for some years ago. And he knew Milan Baba since he's just a little boy. And when Milan Baba's, I guess his father passed away too, yes? He became, was Shamdas his grandfather or father's, the guru? I think grandfather. Okay. So Milan Baba, he became the guru, you know, passed down to family. That's how the Ballabhacharya Sampradaya, that's how they do. So when Milan Baba would come to America, he said Shamdas would always, even though Shamdas was older than his father, Shamdas would pick him up at the airport. He would make so many arrangements for him in every possible way. He would drive him around. He would go to different events with him. And he was, it was Shamdas's way of honoring the whole, his guru and the whole lineage of Ballabhacharya. And he explained, I think it was last year, year after year, Shamdas, he said, always picked him up at the airport, and wherever he was when he was going to fly back to India, he always drove him to the airport. But this year, Shamdas was with him. And he gave a lecture at night of some event somewhere in New Jersey. And there was a massive rainstorm coming. And Shamdas had some sort of damage in his roof. And he owns a house in upstate New York. Was about 7 hours away or something. And he said, Shamdas said, if I don't fix the roof before it rains, my whole house is going to be seriously damaged. So I have to get up there and fix it myself. So after, you know, dropping Milan Baba off, he drove all the way up to his house, many hours. He got there about midnight. It took him a couple hours of just fixing a roof, you know, physically. And Shamdas was crying to Milan Baba. He said, I won't be able to drive you to the airport. He was crying. I won't be able to drive you to the airport. I'm sorry. So he said, all right, I'll arrange another ride. When it came time to go to the airport, Shamdas pulls up, comes to the door, smiling. He said, I thought you had to fix your roof. He said, I did. He was all dirty and everything. I guess. He said, I did. He went all the way up there, fixed his roof, drove all the way down. Maybe it's four or five hours, whatever it was. And Milan Baba said, why did you do this? And Shamdas was weeping tears of affection and gratitude He said, how can I, this is the least I could do to honor my beloved guru by honoring someone so dear to him. Seva, there is no greater joy in the heart of a devotee who tastes the sweetness of selfless service to God, to Krishna, to Ram, and selfless service to Krishna's beloved children. And one of the dearmost people in Shyamdas's life was Sharon. Their relationship was something very transcendental, very, very special.